Hello and welcome to today's episode of Rainer on Leadership, your online home for leadership lessons and advice for both the local church and the workplace. I'm your host, Jonathan Howe, and as always, I'm joined by Tom Rainer, the president and CEO of Lifeway Christian Resources.
You never know when you put something out there on the internet, whether it's in writing or whether it's something like a podcast that can be heard, how the readers or the listeners are going to respond. And so when I wrote originally what was originally a blog post about 9 rapid changes in worship services, I thought it might stir a little bit of dust, but I did not have any idea that it was going to cause the type of conversation that this one did. So I thought in this particular podcast, we would expand upon it. We would talk a little bit more about the issues and maybe offer some clarity to some of the folks who were wondering why we said what we said. So, Jonathan, this is going to be fun. My guess is that this might get a similar type of response.
This post deals specifically with the worship services. I know we talked a lot about changes in church practice, changes in church structure, different things like that. But in this one, we're just talking about the main Sunday, typical Sunday morning worship service. Some churches have it at different times, but we're talking about that one main worship service, right?
That's right, and that's why this is going to be a bit on the controversial side. It's certainly going to be on the debatable side because that primary worship service is dear to really any active member of a church. And so it is not surprising that when we begin to talk about these issues that it stirs a lot of emotions.
All right, number one, choirs are disappearing.
Number one, about kill me.
Well, and I didn't realize the stats. I mean, the stats on this thing, you've got these stats from a Duke study. And the stats on the choirs, 44%, this was 7 years ago, 44% of churches had choirs. I really expected that to be higher.
Well, again, and thanks for the clarity, because this was a Duke study, and this particular data that I'm citing on choirs are disappearing is the data from 1998 to 2007. And basically what has happened, the churches that do not have choirs are increasing by one full percentage point a year. So by 2007, it's at 44%. If we extrapolate that, and probably would be a pretty good thing based upon the trends up to 2007, the percentage of churches with choirs today is only 37%. So basically what we're saying is one out of three churches have choirs. Now, I can always give anecdotal observation because I preach in different churches and I travel around. And frankly, I'm not surprised.
Really?
That would be about where I see it. About one out of three churches have choirs where I go. So different size churches, different styles of worship, but the more traditional style worship are going to have the choirs, but only about one out of three, and so that's why I said the 37% extrapolated number is probably right.
Number two, dress is more casual, and I see this trend.
I know you see that
trend. I live this trend.
You are that trend. I'm looking at you with your shirt tail out. I know that the listeners can't see you. With what kind of shirt is that, Jonathan?
Just a button-down shirt.
It's not a button-down shirt. Your collar, well, yes, button-down's middle, but the collars aren't buttoned down.
It's not an Oxford.
And why do you have two pockets?
I don't know.
What's the basis of that?
Because I'm cool.
Right on the front.
I'm trendy.
So dress is becoming more casual in more places than the local church.
Yes.
I began to see this trend in 1988 when I began pastoring, serving as pastor of a church in St. Petersburg, Florida. I really believe the trend began in more warm climates.
Yeah, that makes sense. And Florida, I mean, it's a more relaxed dress code anyway.
So Florida, California, yeah. Florida's trends go north, California's trends go east, and they meet together, and that's what happens. I remember the first pastor. We had a local association of churches. That's what we called it, association. Probably about 150 churches, if I recall correctly, in the Tampa Bay area. And this pastor made the decision not to wear a tie anymore.
Oh boy.
And back in 1988, and it became really one of the most discussed things that people say, do you know Gary does not wear a tie when he preaches? And it was just the talk of the association of churches.
Was it more, I can't believe Gary's doing that, or if Gary can do it, I can do it?
It was definitely not the latter, especially from me, because I had some deacons that would rather shoot than see me not without a tie. So I continue to wear a tie, wore a tie through all of my church leadership positions. But now you go into a church and almost any part of the United States, and you look around, if the man wearing a tie is indicative, it is definitely more casual. And it goes for females, it goes for children, and it's getting more and more casual, much to the chagrin of some, much to the joy of others.
And you're doing an interim pastorate right now. You don't preach in a tie right now.
I have not preached. There has been one time in like the last 2 to 3 years, maybe two times, where they have requested I wear a tie. And one time, one of the hosts requested I wear a tie, and he didn't have on a tie. I said, well, good gracious, I'm taking mine. So I took mine off before I went to preach. And, my personal interjection here, you know, I believe ties have too much similarities with the hanging noose, the rope. And it's just, I don't understand the invention. I just know that many more will disagree with me than that. But definitely dress is more casual. Remember all the comments that were in the blog post? I mean, people said it was not respect during the worship service time. And that certainly can be the case if it becomes a distraction. Others were affirming it and excited about it. But it is definitely a point of debate and discussion.
Now, when you're at Brentwood Baptist, does Mike wear a tie?
Mike usually wears a tie.
I expect that it's a little more high church there, so I kind of expected that.
Well, high church in relationship to, say, to typical mine. Baptist churches. However, many times he'll do away with the tie during the summertime or other times. And when he preaches his Kairos service, which is on Tuesday nights, about 1,000 young people come. Definitely does not wear a tie. In fact, he usually wears jeans or something like that.
Good for him.
So, yeah, he wears a tie, but there's hardly anyone in the worship service that wears ties. Even the white-collar businessmen do not.
All right, number three, screens are pervasive. And I know the most people that listen to the podcast have not been to where you preach. But
you
the chapel,
love that.
I love the chapel. The chapel where you preach, they pipe in the sermon into the chapel.
Let's back up just a minute. It's a multi-venue.
Yes, multi-venue.
And so I'm preaching in person in one service, and it's being live-fed to another service. I have never seen that.
Yeah, because you preach in the other service,
preach in the other service, or I go give a welcome in one place and then move to the other. Tell me what that screen is like.
This screen that comes up out of the floor.
Out of the floor.
And
it is so incredibly
cool. I have yet to figure out. I've got to ask my friend Jeremy Bustle, who works there, how they make that happen, because I've never seen a screen come out of the floor. It doesn't really have legs or anything behind it. It just rolls up. And usually these screens come down from the ceiling. This one comes up right there at the front of the
Out of the stage.
Right out of the stage, and just, boop, there's a screen, and there's, you know, all right. life-size Tom Rainer.
That's what I was about to ask. So I'm tall?
Yeah, you're tall there.
So what's 5'9 times 2? I'm 10'18.
Yeah. I don't think it works like that. But yeah, something like that. So,
wow. It's the first time I've been tall in my life. At least I get to look over people in that case. I'd love to let John Kroll see me in that setting.
But back to the point, screens, they're everywhere. Every church, I mean, I don't know the last time I've been in a church that did not have a screen.
I do remember serving as a pastor in a church where we discussed the possibility of having screens, and this is not an exaggeration. I'm no longer a pastor, so I don't have to exaggerate. This is absolutely true. One of my deacons told me that screens were of Satan.
Oh, wow.
I don't know the text, but we didn't get...
I don't think he knows the text either.
We did not get screens that year. But again, screens are often seen as intrusions in the worship service by the detractors. By most people, they are seen as something that is very helpful because they can look up during the music instead of look down during the music to see the words.
And what about hymnals, though? Because, I mean, I'm at a church that has screens. We still got hymnals.
All right.
Does anybody pick up their hymnal? 6-7 months and we've never used them.
Hymnals really adorn the pews and the chairs very well.
Yeah.
But more people are just looking at the words on the screen and not picking up the hymnals.
And we're still selling hymnals. I know. I mean, that's one of our top sellers. I see the reports, and people are still using hymnals.
People are giving them
to churches. Churches are still requesting them.
Church practice is declining in that area, but it is still very much alive. So hymnals are alive, but screens are really growing.
Number four is one that I know that's probably not consistent with you, but preaching is longer.
It is, and this is this portion of the trends does not come from the Duke study.
No.
So it was anecdotal, it was observational on my part, and I may be proven wrong when it's all said and done. I am primarily talking about the younger preachers,
yes,
those who are recently out of seminary, those who are in their 20-somethings and in their 30-somethings, they have many of them have gone to seminaries where they are teaching them that the 40 to 45-minute sermon is normative.
Yeah.
And so if they're coming onto the scene, that means the average preaching time is most likely increasing. But if your pastor's in the 40s, late 40s, 50s, 60s, it's probably a 25 minute sermon.
25 to 28 seems to be, I guess, what was the standard before. And now I think you're seeing over 30 at least.
Well, in the church where I'm preaching for several weeks, to call me an interim would be an overstatement, but in the church where I'm preaching for several weeks, they allocate me 35 minutes. And that's something I have not been accustomed to. And they said, if you need 40, even a few more, we can work it in.
You're thinking, what am I going to do?
I don't have any more content. No, that's not true. But I do think with the younger preachers coming on the scene that this is a phenomenon that I think if we did it with objective data, that it'd probably be proved correct.
Next is multi is normative, and that could be multi-service, multi-campus, multi-site, multi-venue. Right. I mean, you used to be, whenever you are done with the interim part, you will be back at what is a multi-venue, multi-site, and multi-service campus.
Oh, gosh. I'm thinking, Jonathan is referring to my church in the Nashville area, Brentwood. We have several Sunday morning services, but all of those Sunday morning services are not in the same place.
No. You have a deaf venue.
We have a deaf venue where the floor actually moves during the songs, and so that there's a feel of vibration since the deaf obviously cannot hear it. Then there is a place where they go for a more casual atmosphere, and so they're at tables and mics. Video or our live feed is coming into there. Then there are several live services, and then there's Tuesday night, which is Kairos, which is primarily for the 20-somethings. Then it is multi-campus, and I'm losing track of how many campuses.
You have a Spanish campus?
Brentwood has. No, we have a...
Spanish service?
No, we have a... I believe it's Chinese service.
So you have multilingual even?
We have multilingual. Yeah, multilingual. And of course, deaf would be considered multilingual as well. So, yeah, they're multi-everything. But you're too young for this. In fact, you're too young for most anything, Jonathan. But I remember when the big debate was over multi-services. When you would, people would say, no, if you go to two or three morning services, then you are going to divide the people up and they're not going to know each other. And the list goes on.
I think there's some merit to that, honestly.
There is merit to that. But the fact is, you're not going to know more than 100 people, no matter what size church you're in.
You got to stop trying to know all 1,500 people in the church.
It won't work.
No.
It won't work for anyone. But yeah, multi is more normative, and it is becoming even more so, especially with multi-venue and multi-campus on the scene.
And I think that ties into number 6, where you say that attendees are more diverse. You just mentioned that at Brentwood, you've got a Chinese service, you've got a deaf service, you've got your regular services, which cater to a diverse group of people, socioeconomic and racial.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, that's just a small example of how diverse churches have become.
There are two paths to take on that. One is the path you're going down. Attendees are more diverse, which was one of the certainly fast-growing trends that we're seeing in worship services, and they're growing more diverse. I almost said divorce. They're growing more diverse because there are different types of services for different ethnic groups. Absolutely. But 20 years ago, an Anglo church in a Sunday morning service would be 99.9% Anglo. That's changing.
Yeah.
It's changing because our neighborhoods are changing. Yeah. The world
is changing. Yeah.
I look at my neighborhood and I have someone that is a native of India across the street. Then I have actually an agnostic physician on one side I'm in, then a Methodist on the other side, and then African Americans catty corner to me.
Yeah.
So our neighborhoods are changing, our communities are changing, and for the good, we're becoming more diverse in our worship services. It's not just one particular ethnic or racial group.
Yeah, and I live in a suburb on the other side, kind of on the other side of town than you do. But even in our smaller church, it's, you know, 1,000 or so. We have Nigerian families, Chinese families, Hispanic families, and I believe we even have some from Europe. It's like European. I mean, they look Anglo, but they're, not from America.
They're not in the United States.
Yeah. So, I mean, even in our smaller church, it doesn't have to be a multi-thousand member mega church to have diversity. Even smaller churches that I go to and I see and I'm around, we have that kind of diversity as well.
I recently preached in a church, and I'm going to say that the attendance was probably 60 or 70, and it was a Sunday night, so it was even down a little bit more than that. And I looked around what I knew would have been an all-white congregation 10 years ago, and it's probably one-third non-white.
Wow.
Which was
fantastic.
Just had to be a change from the way it has been in the past.
Number seven, we know all about this one. Conflict is not increasing.
Someone took me to task on this, and I almost responded.
Because you've written many posts about how conflict is coming down.
But here was their issue, and I would have liked to have offered clarity, but I was just too lazy and didn't want to write a full explanation because a new podcast was coming. The title of the post, the title of our podcast, 9 Rapid Changes in Worship, in Church Worship. And so the critic, and again, I'm not at all bothered by it, said, you need to rephrase that. If conflict is not increasing, that does not match with rapid changes. Because, he said, that's stable. That's not rapid change. My point was this.
Oh, okay.
My point was this. There used to be accelerating conflict. It was growing. And to go from growth to non-growth is a rapid change.
Yeah.
So, again, I could have worded it better. I understand the person who took issue with me on that, and I'm not at all bothered by it. I lost maybe 2 nights sleep, but I'll be okay. I'll be okay on that.
So why do you think that is, though?
I think the worship wars are one issue. Yeah, I wrote about that in a post that the worship wars were the primary issue of conflict. They have begun to subside. They are not over. I think leadership is beginning to understand that we are going to lead in a way that will minimize conflict. But I think above all, the worship issue was the impetus behind all of it, or most of it. And with that decreasing, then conflict is not increasing.
You think the increase in maybe the variety, I mean, we talk about the different styles of church and different styles of worship at the same church. Do you think the more variety, more of a, I don't want to call it a buffet approach, but that's what I'm going to go with, that allows for less conflict whenever people have more choices?
Probably so. People have a greater exposure to the different types of worship styles. And another issue that we could mention would be the millennial generation.
Yeah.
The millennial generation is fed up with political fighting, church fighting, any kind of fighting, and so they are resisting the conflict, and as a result, they are more prone to make peace or leave.
All right, number 8, more worship attendees are attending larger churches. This probably has a lot to do with the increased urbanization of America.
Yeah, the very fact that more and more of our people are concentrated in more in fewer places.
Yeah, more city life than rural life.
Right, the per capita per a particular area is more dense, and then in other areas there's hardly anyone there. This was confusing to some people, and I understand that, but the stat that came from Duke was churches with an attendance of 400 and up, and that's referring to a worship attendance.
Yeah.
Churches with an attendance of 400 and up now account for 90% of all worship. And then someone would come back and say, no, wait a minute, 50% of all churches are 75 below or less in worship. That's true as well.
Those big ones just make up that much difference.
There are that many more people that go to the larger churches. So if you're in a church of 400, you're in the top 10% of churches. Yeah, 75 is the median point, but that is not the average point. Mm-hmm. The average point is larger because there are more people in the larger churches.
And number 9 is another one I think we're going to do a podcast on later on, but Sunday evening services are disappearing.
Wow. Again, that was really...
Hot button.
It was a hot button. I kind of knew it would be. Maybe I stirred the pot a little bit because I wrote a separate blog post on it right after I did this one. I am really trying to be objective on these trends, on these observations. There's some of them that I could come in and offer my opinion. Obviously, you've heard my opinion about ties, but I even understand that casual dress can go to an extreme.
Yeah.
It can be a distraction. And so when I wrote about Sunday evening services, and again, we will follow that up with its own podcast, again, there's a lot of emotion and a lot of allegiance. I love I love the readers of my blog and the listeners of the podcast. And I say that again and again because I think I am blessed to have a community that is some of the brightest and the best. And to hear the comments that came in on this, and one of them was one of the more telling comments. I wish I had his name in front of me, and I would give him credit for it. But he spoke of the fact that he was in a church that had an evening service, or maybe he was in a church that did not. I don't remember, but I think he was in a church that did, and they were talking about doing away with it. And the most outspoken of those who did not want to do away with the Sunday evening service were those who did not attend the Sunday evening service. They had already voted with their feet that they did not want to come to the Sunday evening service. They just didn't like the thought of their church not having a Sunday evening service.
This trend seems a little bit more obvious than the others because I can list off the number of names of churches who have stopped Sunday nights.
Right.
I can't list off one who didn't have it and now does.
I cannot think of any.
Nobody is adding Sunday night services unless it's a growing, booming church and they're adding, Sunday morning style type services.
In those cases, Sunday evening really becomes an alternative to Sunday morning. If you go to Sunday evening, you don't go to Sunday morning.
But not a second different type of service on a Sunday night. Nobody is doing that. They may be changing what they're doing if they're already doing it, but I don't know of any church. And if you're out there and you're at a church that has added a Sunday night service after not having it, please let us know because you are a rare breed.
There is one commenter. Really? Among the many that said that they had added it. And I cannot provide you the details. And there were so many comments that we would have to go back and look through them.
Well, this week's podcast has been brought to you by Dr. Rayner's new book, Autopsy of a Deceased Church. Whether your church is vibrant or dying, Autopsy of a Deceased Church will walk you through the radical paths necessary to keep your church alive to the glory of God and the advancement of Christ's kingdom. You can find out more at tomrayner.com/autopsy.
Every time I see or hear that, it's just creepy. TomRayner.com autopsy. Ugh, it's like viewing your own funeral. I am excited about that book, Jonathan, and its recent release is doing well in the market, and the churches are receiving it well, so I am very blessed. Hope if you have heard these rapid changes in church worship services, that you understand that facts are our friends. We don't need to deny reality. We need to face reality and then respond in the way God wants us to. That's the reason I write the way I do. That's the reason I try to get the facts, not to stir controversy, but to try to get us to see where God is working and to understand how we should best respond for His glory.
That'll do it for this week on Rayner on Leadership. Be sure to subscribe on iTunes and join us online at TomRayner.com.